This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's talk about the disaster that is the Democrat Party. Michael Knowles joins us. Is the Supreme Court going to reverse something else that's big? All that's coming up on I'm Right. Have you ever heard the phrase, holding on to the tiger by the ears? Or I've actually heard it a different way, holding on to a wolf by the ears. You ever heard that phrase? Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. The obvious explanation for it is you're in a very dangerous situation, okay? Because you got a tiger in front of you and you're holding him by the ears. But obviously you only have so much strength. You can only hold on to his ears for so long. You let him go. If you let him go, he's going to eat you. At some point, you're in a dangerous situation. But at the same time, you have no choice but to hold on to the tiger by the ears. In a lot of ways, communists do this. They get themselves trapped. They get themselves trapped because their evil nature is horrific. And they can't lie about everything forever. You can lie about everything for a while. You can fool, what's that saying? You can fool all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. I don't know if that's the saying, but it's very close to it. If you're a communist, you believe in control because you're fighting a revolution and trying to destroy everything. So you can't lead with that. You have to lie. Lies are built in. We talk about that. Lie, 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 lie. And that will work for a time. On some people, it'll work all the time. The Democrat in your life, they believe all of them. But eventually, people wake up. For instance, remember when Joe Biden took a little tumble on the stage? Embarrassing. I get it. Embarrassing. Terrible. It was an embarrassing moment. I got it. You got it. But here's the thing. In the immediate aftermath of that, his staff started to get concerned, you see. Started to get concerned because they talk with him every single day. They walk with him every single day. And they knew before he tumbled on stage that he was not a functional adult, that he was not able to walk and talk. They knew. And so what did they do? Well, here's what they did.
And make sure we clear the record here, he tripped over a sandbag on the stage, and briefly he tripped and got up, and he got right back up and continued what he was there to do. He did not, there was no need for the doctor to see him as it was related to the fall.
America is a country that loves youth and vitality, you know, which is why we have laws against age discrimination, because we tend to favor youthfulness and the new thing. In a lot of countries, people who've been in office a longer period of time are praised for their wisdom. And I think that Joe Biden rightly says that he has grown very wise in his many decades in public office.
Look, I'm more than 2 years older than President, and I do just fine. I don't want to have a fall. But if I do, I hope I get up as good as he did.
Yeah, people fall down. I believe he tripped. But, you know, I'm just...
Didn't he reply something like I was sandbagged?
It was a sandbag that he tripped on.
Yeah.
But what is this obsession? People are just... I mean, I've known old people all my life. And I've never seen this kind of obsession with, you know, people being old and... What the hell? What the hell? Because everybody's getting there. So, yeah.
He's just wiser than ever. Why are you mad that he's... They lie. They did what they do. It's built into communists. They lie about everything at all times. They lied. Well, that works for a while until it doesn't. Remember? Do you remember? I remember how quickly the polls started to show that the American people were getting concerned about Joe Biden's age. Poll after poll after poll after poll would come out, and it kept getting worse and worse and worse. The communists could lie for a while. Lied to get him elected. Lied for the first year. Eventually, got to let go of the tiger's ears. Dome's actually a great example. The communists, because she's black and a woman, have done the best they can to prop her up as being a good candidate. It's how she was able to rise. Well, it's part of how she was able to rise through the ranks in California politics, from one position to the next position to the next position. This is a woman who can't even talk. Why? Because the communists were lying at all times. She's Kamala Harris. She's a genius. She's brilliant. She's wonderful. She's this. She's that. But that was all a lie. Eventually, she rose to be vice president of the United States of America, which was obviously a diversity hire. Joe Biden announced it. I'm only going to pick a black woman. He picked her, elevated her, and then when he dropped out, handpicked her to be the nominee. But it was, again, all a lie, all smoke and mirrors. She was a terrible candidate. Donald Trump stomped her after they handed her $2 billion to run, and a new Emerson poll came out, not a national poll, a Democrat primary poll, and Dome, the former vice president, the former Democrat nominee for president of the United States of America, is in third place. That brings me to a prediction I brought up on this show multiple times, but allow me to bring it up again. Everyone thinks Kamala Harris is going to run for president in 2028. And she may, don't get me wrong, she may, but I say she won't. She has already announced she's not going to run for governor. We all assumed that that meant she was going to run for president, but Dome has one more shot. One more shot to be the nominee. If she's already polling in third behind Newsom in the rear admiral, I say she sits it out. She's not old. 60. Politics, that's not old at all. Wait 4 years. Wait 8 years. Hang around. Maybe read a book and try for it one more time. I say she sits it out. And speaking of Dome, actually, there's a story. It's going to sound small, but this story about Dome and J.D. Vance's kids is actually... It's a pretty good example of why the Democrat Party is currently on the outs in America. And you see, here's what it is. I've explained this to you before, men and women, but I'm mainly talking to women, especially young women. Everyone hates a feminist. Maybe you're flirting with feminism. Maybe the musician you love promotes it. Maybe your friends talk about it all the time. Yeah, you go, girl. You can do anything a man can do. Okay, I'm not here to talk you out of that ridiculousness. That's not actually what I'm here to say. I am here to tell you that everyone will hate you. Everybody. Even other feminists hate being around feminists because they're bitter and they're nasty and they're nags and they're petty. And nobody in the history of mankind has ever sat down and said, wow, I wish I could hang out with a feminist today. If you choose that route, that I am woman, hear me roar route, everyone will hate your guts. You turn into a nasty human being. Listen to this story. This is why everyone hates Democrats now. Listen to this.
So when you moved into the vice president's residence, had you seen it before?
No, I had never seen it before. And there was a bit of a controversy. I don't remember exactly what had happened, but I think that normally it's customary for the outgoing vice president to show the incoming vice president's family the house. Mm-hmm. And we have three little kids. So I guess at the time our kids were like 7, 5 and, you know, 2, I guess Mirabelle turned 3 right before the inauguration. And so, you know, now they're a little bit older, but, you know, they had never seen this house, and Usha really wanted to show them. So what we actually proposed is, recognizing the weirdness of the politics, can Usha take the kids over and just show them where they're going to be living for the next 4 years? And they were rebuffed.
She said, no. No, your kids can't come over. It sounds small, but that petty, vindictive, nasty feminist attitude is exactly why Democrats are losing younger generations, not just younger men. Young women don't want to be hateful and miserable and hated by everybody. Young men especially hate. They have a natural disdain for this kind of nasty pettiness. Honestly, and it goes beyond just personal things with people's kids. The Teamsters Union has traditionally been about as reliable a Democrat vote as there is in the United States of America. But not when the feminist walks in the room.
We had a general executive board meeting probably around June of 2024. And there was an event that one of our vice presidents, Joan Corey, she's out of my local, she went to, I don't know if it was an Emily's List event, the day before our general executive board, and Vice President Harris was there. And so they do a photo op line. So Joan goes in the line, and Joan says, "I'm Joan Corey. I'm a vice president with the Teamsters Union." And she pointed her finger at Joan and said, "Teamsters better get on board." And so Joan says, "Excuse me? Yeah, Teamsters better get on board. I don't know why you haven't endorsed me yet." So she comes back and she tells me this, and I'm like, "The nerve, like the nerve." Her closing was, "Listen, I'm going to win with you or without you." And it was like such a smug answer, like, okay. And that turned the majority of people in that room off.
Turns people off. Young ladies, I know you may be mad at me right now. The path to being hated by everyone in your life is to embrace feminism. You'll become a bitter, nasty hag who everyone hates. And so, look, they've gone that route, or they try to butch up. You know, they've lost Middle America. They've lost the Teamsters Union. They've lost construction guys. They've lost the blue collar. The Democrat Party has become the urban elite party, and you can't win elections like that. So how do you win back the blue collar guys? Well, you can roll Tim Walz out there like they did during the campaign trail, watch him struggle to load a shotgun. Or you can do this cursing thing they all do now.
We are in a basketball game right now, if you'll excuse the metaphor, where the refs have left the arena. And the other side is just clobbering the shit out of us, just punching us in the face, kicking us in the and we're kind of throwing our hands up and we're asking the crowd, the people of America, "Hey, do you see what's going on here? This is unfair. This isn't the rules that we agreed to play by." Well, who cares about the fucking rules right now? Punch back, kick back, dunk over their heads, and win some fucking power.
F this and F that and F this. It sounds like a rated R movie now. This is all very forced. This is all about trying to be relatable to blue-collar guy. Instead of just, you know, not being terrible to everybody, they just say the F word. We'll see how it works out for them. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. What makes me uncomfortable is we have an Italian joining the show yet next. Michael Knowles is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Vatican, World War II. Before we talk to Michael, let me talk to you about sleeping well. Gosh, I slept so good last night. I was frustrated yesterday when I got home from work. It was a long story, frustrating day. Had myself a cup of hot chocolate about 9 o'clock last night. Sat down, we were watching something on TV, cup of hot chocolate, but it was special hot chocolate. It was Dream Powder from Beam. Has a bunch of natural things in it. 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, I just was nice and relaxed. Went, knocked right out. 9 hours, wake up, feeling good. Not groggy. Because it's natural. You want to sleep like that? Cup of hot chocolate before bed and sleep like a baby? Shopbeam.com/JesseKelly saves you a fortune. Try one bag. You'll always have some in the house. We'll be back.
So, this looks to me like an emergency which is manufactured because of a public relations crisis relating to the Epstein file. He doesn't want to release the Epstein file, so he wants everybody to look in another direction.
Is there a more loyal communist foot soldier than Jamie Raskin? There is no slimy piece of lying propaganda that Jamie Raskin will not repeat on the news. And in a weird way, I almost admire it. Joining me now, he's Italian. Michael Knowles has an actually really cool new series on the secret Vatican files of World War II, which we will get to in just a moment. Michael, Jamie Raskin is just peak. He's so sleazy that he's almost a movie character to me. Does that make sense?
Speaking of slimy propaganda, yeah, the sort of stuff that they've said about Pope Pius XII, just wait until you see it in the series. Yes, Raskin and the Democrats are spinning their wheels because they don't have any good way to hit Trump right now. They could try to hit him on migration not working, but that's going to flop because most people want deportations. And there was that study that just came out, shows 2 million foreign-born have just self-deported already. So that doesn't work. They can hit him on World War III, except we don't have World War III. They can hit him on economic economic turmoil, except the economy is actually doing great. So they got nothing. And they can try to complain about what? The federal takeover of the federal district? They can try to complain about what authoritarianism? What are they going to get them on? They have nothing. So they spew and they squeal and they slime. But I don't think it's having much political effect.
I don't think so either, and it seems like they're a little bit trapped because they're billionaire donors. They want this crazy, kooky, a tranny in every TV commercial stuff. Their animal base wants this stuff. So even if you are a moderate Democrat politician, you can't take moderate positions on everything. You have to roll out to the media and be Chairman Mao every time you're asked something, and it's completely screwing them.
Well, the proof of this is you look at Gavin Newsom. Forget about Jamie Raskin for a second. Newsom is extremely liberal. I mean, this guy is from San Francisco. This guy was performing gay marriages like 20 years before it was legal. And he's a leftist without question. And yet he recognizes that Trump won the popular vote in November. So he tries to moderate. He tries to be like right-wingers in 2016. You know, he launches a podcast. He cozies up to Steve Bannon and Charlie Kirk. He's trying to get that ground, and he's immediately rebuffed. So then he's got to go swing right back to the left and go braying and whining about Trump. And when you look at the 2028 presidential field for the Democrats, you realize they're a party right now without a constituency.
Yeah, praise God for that. Okay, now, because I'm 44 going on 84, we have to talk about one of my favorite subjects on the planet, and that would be World War II, because I'm an American man. Okay, so what did you people do during World War II, Michael? What's this whole series about?
You're talking my people. Who are you talking about my people? Who are you talking about? You? We're, of course, we're talking about the Italians. One of the worst bits of fake news that we've seen in recent years. You got to zoom back a little bit. Before 2016, you got to go all the way back to the decades after the Second World War. There has been this calumny against the Catholic Church, and specifically Pope Pius XII, saying that he was silent in the face of Hitler, that he was complicit. One lunatic called him Hitler's Pope, and it is completely bogus. And I think that this series comes at a very important moment right now, because you're seeing a lot of people questioning historical narratives because we've been lied to by a lot of public officials. And so, on the one hand, you have people saying that Pope Pius XII was bad because he was pro-Hitler. Then you have some people, unfortunately, who are saying Pope Pius XII was good because he was pro-Hitler. But the reality is, the truth is, that Pope Pius XII did a lot to stand up to Hitler, and it wasn't always singing a song in front of him. He was doing a lot of this work in quiet, in the shadows, in silence. But we have the files now. The Vatican Secret Archive, now called the Apostolic Archive since 2019, gives you a clear record of Pius XII and the Catholic Church's role in the Second World War, and the story is totally different from what you've heard from propagandists.
Michael, what role do you, a Catholic, not an Italian, what role do you believe the Pope should play in things like wars? Because this is as old as, you know, there being a Pope. There's a war. Even if the Pope's not involved, people want him to weigh in. Hey, you should weigh in. You should say this. You should say that. Some people think he should say nothing. What do you think?
The Pope is the head of the Catholic Church. Catholic means universal. And so the Pope can't be beholden to one nation over another nation. The Pope can't be held to one political faction over another political faction. So what he needs to do is protect his flock, protect the faith and the church that was instituted by Christ. And so that involves a lot of diplomacy. I mean, this, as you say, Jesse, this is a tale as old as time, going back to the Roman emperors and classical antiquity, where the Pope would rely on political leaders, but he would also have to push political leaders, and he has to assert his spiritual authority. And in the modern times, the clearest example of this was in World War II, the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century, when the Pope was very, very active, because this is a church militant. You know, this is on earth. We have buildings, we have bishops, we have people. We are called to do things in public life. And the slander against Pius XII is that he sat back and did nothing in his palace. And that is not what happened at all. This is a man who was intimately, deeply involved in what happened in World War II, and he was on the right side of it.
Shifting gears back to America, I was at the Vatican recently, actually around Christmas time. It was amazingly clean. Washington, D.C. is not. Apparently the National Guard is coming in now. This is the state of Democrat cities. It's one thing for Donald Trump to bring in the National Guard and clean up Washington, D.C., which I believe he will, but that doesn't change New York, Michael. It doesn't change Seattle, doesn't change Los Angeles, Chicago, and it saddens me. I know everyone, it's popular to be a city hater. Our cities matter, and it saddens me. It's awful.
Yes, this is a big shift, I think, in Trump's era, because previously you would have conservatives say, oh, who cares about New York? Who cares about L.A.? Let it burn. Let those jerks elect a Muslim socialist. We don't care. They'll live in their own squalor. But Trump is coming in and saying, no, you know what? I'm an American, and we have the right to have good cities, and we need to protect the people in those cities who are being sold out by their politicians. So no, I'm not going to let it all go to pot, okay? And this is much more controversial than Trump saying, I'm going to govern Washington, D.C. It's the federal district. The federal government has been in control of it since the Constitution was ratified. No. He's saying, what about Baltimore? What about Oakland? And I think you have a lot of leftists and a lot of squishy Republicans who say, look, we're going to have two nations, and it's going to be the haves and the have-nots, the left and the right, the coastal people, the Midwestern people, and we're just not going to care about each other at all. And Trump is saying, no, I was elected by the American people to be the president of all of America, and I am not going to allow our cities to fall to hell. And you can try to stop me, but see how that plays next election, because you're going to be on the side of drug use and vagrancy and homelessness and murder and rape, and I'm going to be on the side of cleaning up the streets. And guess who's going to be more appealing to the people who actually have to live with the consequences of those policies?
Michael, where do they go from here? Democrats, I mean. It's hard to see from the outside looking in a path forward, because what you just said is 100% right. Even normies, they see them as the party of illegals. They see them as the party of crime. They see them as the party of trannies. Now, they're the party that wants a drag queen to shake his penis in your daughter's face. That's not a good label for a political party.
No, I would generally recommend candidates avoid that. That's not going to persuade parents. But you know why the Democrats do it? They do it because they think, okay, we flood the country with illegals. They're more likely to vote for Trump or their kids are, or sorry, they're more likely to vote for us, or they're more likely for their kids to vote for us. So we're going to get an electoral majority, even if we irritate all of our constituents. Hey, we're going to let the prisons open up. We're going to let criminals out on the street because we think we're going to pander to some group or another group. And the reason that they can convince themselves of that is because they don't have to live with any of the consequences of it. They don't have illegals in their neighborhoods, except when they come over to clean their homes and mind their gardens. They don't have to deal with the crime on the streets. They're in their gated communities in the suburbs. They don't have to see this, okay? So it's all an abstract problem for the Democrats. And Trump, who actually was a rich kid, who actually does live in penthouses, Trump has a sense of care for his common man. You know, this is one nation conservatism. And he says, no, just because I can live in the gated community doesn't mean that I'm going to ignore my fellow Americans. And this has completely realigned politics. Now the Republicans are the party of the working class. You've got even the labor unions, which are largely corrupt, not endorsing Democrats. You've got a huge shift of racial minorities who are voting Republican now, because the Democrats thought that they wouldn't have to pay a price for their cynical political moves. Where do they go from here? They're going to have to rethink the entire platform. They're going to have to rethink their whole agenda, and I don't think they have a vision for that.
Michael, where do people learn about these secret Vatican files?
There is one place and one place only. Well, two places. I guess the Vatican is one of them. But the place you can do it from your home is Daily Wire Plus. You go to Daily Wire Plus right now, dailywire.com/Vatican Files. Go there, become a member. It's the only place to see it. And you will get to see not only the truth about the Second World War and the Catholic Church's role in it, you'll not only see all the propaganda and how nonsensical it all is when you look at the facts, you'll also get to see this face. Okay, come on. How are you going to say no to that, folks? Go to Daily Wire Plus right now.
That's tough sledding, but I promise it's going to be good. Michael, thank you, brother. Now, that's actually a perfect segue into olive oil. Olive oil is important. Just ask Michael. Matters. And good olive oil matters a lot. You don't think it does until you try one bottle of good olive oil. And most people, think about how sad this is. Most people will live their entire lives without tasting a single drop of good olive oil, because we all buy our olive oil in the grocery store. You go down to the grocery store and you grab a bottle off the shelf. Have you looked at the date? Go grab the olive oil in your house and look at the date. It's ancient, months old, sometimes years old. why don't you try one bottle fresh from a farm? Taste it. Taste the difference. You will never go anywhere else but farmfresh246.com. They'll send you a free bottle to try it. It's a $39 bottle. They'll send it to you for free. You pay like a buck for the shipping. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back. All right, so I'm in a great mood. I hope you're in a great mood. It's Wednesday. It's hump day, and I'm not going to bring you down. Okay, I'm not going to bring you down, but I just wanted to have a little talk. Just a little talk about where we are with the culture war. Remember, America is not just an economic system, okay? You are more than dollars and cents. America is a culture. Our culture is not kind of a side issue that we don't want to deal with. Having a good culture is everything. And the communists realized this years and years and years ago. This is before you were born, no matter how old you are. Before you were born, they realized, okay, hey, it's one thing to adjust taxes, try to go after private property. We need to destroy the family home. We need to destroy the church. We need to destroy the culture of America. And so they set out to do that. Generation after generation after generation. And really what they did, which was masterful, I admit it, Antonio Gramsci, the Italian communist, he said, we have to march through the institutions. We can't destroy all these places we want to destroy, screaming on the street corner with a sign off, abortion. I mean, look, that has an effect, but that doesn't move the needle. What you need to do is infiltrate and conquer the institutions that create culture, that promote culture. And they did it. And they still have them. And I know we have good things happening right now. We elected Donald Trump. We have good pushback coming against these people. I'm not trying to bring you down and be Debbie Downer here. But just because we have the White House doesn't mean we have reconquered all the institutions they have. Trump, I really respect it. He talks about it.
This was a sick, woke culture that I think we've largely ended. And a lot of those people that were woke are now turning out to be the opposite.
It's sick. It's evil. And the people who have done that to us, the people who spent year after year, decade after decade, marching through our institutions so they could rot out this country from the inside, they're not gone. They haven't self-deported. In fact, most of the people haven't lost their jobs. 99.9% of them are exactly where they were before, on the inside of our institutions, pushing their demonic filth out as fast as they possibly can. They may be quieter now, they may have changed their titles, but they haven't changed their mind. I know, by the way, professional football is not probably something that's on your mind a lot. I don't watch anymore, sadly. I signed out of the NFL after being an NFL freak. I signed out about the time they printed Black Lives Matter in the end zone. But I'm also adult enough to acknowledge it does matter. Whether you watch or don't watch, it's one of the most popular forms of entertainment in the United States of America. Entertainment is a critical institution. Don't ever dismiss it as being nothing. It matters a lot. Let me introduce you to the new Minnesota Vikings cheerleaders. We haven't won. Don't think because we have the White House and because we are taking good steps that we can sit back and rest on our laurels and we've got them on the run. Oh, I know. We are making gains in ways we haven't made gains. And again, we should feel good about that. But this kind of filth is still absolutely everywhere. go turn on the newest series from whatever, Prime, Netflix, and let me know how far you get into it before they roll out some LGBTQ turbo freak and rub it in your freaking face. We haven't conquered these people at all. I mean, look, the Washington, D.C.'s been in the news. And of course, this little tidbit from their D.C. police chief made the rounds yesterday.
Is what the chain of command is now?
What does that mean?
Well, is it Pam Bondi speaking to the mayor speaking to you, or how does this work?
You know what the chain of command is now? What does that mean? The chief of police. Do you think she's the only one? Police agency, major ones, the biggest ones in the country. Police agency after police agency after police agency has stocked itself full of DEI higher communist women running it, destroying it and rotting it out. It's not that it used to happen. It's happening now. It's happening today. Remember what the DC union said, the DC police union said when Trump stepped in and took over? Among the many things they said was, thank God we can't recruit anybody. Cities like Minneapolis, others across the country, are so communist, so disgusting, run by some brain-dead communist woman, they can't get a young alpha male to join because who in the world would want to serve under that hag behind her Subaru? Nobody. Nobody would. We haven't won a thing. We are taking back ground slowly, but it is ground we lost. They took 100 yards of the football field. We just had a successful 3-yard run. Please don't get up and spike the football like some idiot prima donna who's still down 21 points with 97 yards to go. We have a long, long way to go. And we can never win this war while our university system churns out 4 million new trained communists a year, like this valedictorian.
Excuse my language, but to that I say, f*** ICE and f*** the Trump administration.
$4 million a year, trained, armed with the knowledge that America sucks, marching forward into the corporate world, back into the university system, into the legal profession. People just like that savage right there, they're still becoming judges. They're still getting elected to DA. They're still worming their way into the corporate boardroom, usually through the HR department. If your company has one of those, that's where you'll find the communist lesbians every single time. They are marching still through the institutions. We have a long, long way to go. Now's the time to push. Because the good news, I do want to end this little rant with some good news. The good news is they are afraid. They do feel the culture pushing back on them. They celebrated under Joe Biden for 4 years. That's why they behaved like the animals they are. They were practically dancing naked in the streets. Actually, not practically. Most of them were dancing naked in the streets. They thought they had it all, and now they're seeing it ripped from them. So they are afraid. When your enemy is afraid, you do not back off. You certainly don't extend a hand and help him up. You rout him and wipe him off of the field. Now's the time to be more aggressive than we have ever been. You keep that in mind. All right. Let's talk about some other things next. Well, the Supreme Court in recent years has been extremely awesome, extremely terrible. Just depends on the day. We wake up one day and we look at our phones and we want to chuck it into the ocean. And then other days they overturn Roe versus Wade, and all of a sudden slaughtering babies in mass is no longer the law in the country. So what's coming soon? Possibly another one. Joining me now, someone who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, Alex Sawyer, author of the book Lawless Lawfare. She's with the Washington Times. Okay, what's the Supreme Court working on now, Alex?
Yeah, so one of the biggest petitions pending before the Supreme Court is, you kind of referenced the Roe v. Wade issue. Now we have a petition asking the justices to overturn their 2015 ruling legalizing same-sex marriage. So that was the Obergefell case. And it rested on the same type of principle, if you will, a substantive due process, as what the court used in Roe v. Wade to justify essentially the right to an abortion. And what that really means is, substantive due process has had a lot of criticism from conservative legal scholars, because it's where courts basically say that there's these fundamental rights like marriage equality, the right to an abortion, that are not necessarily in the text of the Constitution, but guaranteed by somehow the 14th Amendment and the 5th Amendment. So you saw basically in 2022, the Supreme Court take a look at that and say, this is suspect legal reasoning for giving women the right to abortion nationwide. This issue belongs to the states. Let's allow them to regulate that. They overturned Roe v. Wade. That was the Dobbs case. Now they're being asked basically to do the same thing with gay marriage and overturn their 2015 precedent with Obergefell. Now, the petition comes from back during that 2015 ruling. There was national news about Kim Davis, a Kentucky county clerk. She refused, based on her religious beliefs, to sign off on same-sex marriage licenses. She ended up doing 6 days in jail. The state later, you know, passed some sort of exemption for those who feel religious beliefs interfere with their right to their ability to sign off on those certificates. But a gay couple sued, and they said that they were entitled to have her specific name on their marriage license. It wasn't enough for them that they could have a marriage license with someone else's name. They had to go after Kim Davis. And the lower court actually ruled for the couple on emotional distress. And so she was fined a few $100,000 in legal fees. She took that. That's the case that's actually before the Supreme Court. She's asking them specifically, can you give me immunity because I was a government official? I shouldn't be sued in this context. And will you overturn Obergefell? Now, two things on that. They could just take one of those. They could just say, we're only going to decide the immunity issue and not go ahead and go all the way and take up a potential challenge to their 2015 precedent. But there are three justices still on the court who dissented in Obergefell. That's Roberts, Alito, and Thomas. And they really would only need one more to join them and vote in favor of hearing this case and hearing that issue for it to be granted. I'm not sure if the court will go that far after they just did abortion, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed, of course, those filthy animals would try to make her put her name on the thing. That's just
it's
so
wild, apropos. Right? It's all not right, okay for someone else to sign off. We had to go after her.
Yeah. It's freaking gross. It's freaking, these people are the worst. Okay, let's move on to other things, because there are other legal things and I'm too dumb to discuss them, like an emergency docket. Apparently one of those is coming, and I don't even know what those words mean, but it sounds really important. What's an emergency docket and what's coming?
Yeah, so this is really the biggest story, I think, of the Supreme Court era under the Trump administration. And I've reached out to the DOJ. I'm trying to get exact numbers, because what somebody counts as an emergency docket petition is kind of speculative. Some people might count some petitions, some other people might not. What it really means is that when a party goes to the Supreme Court on an emergency basis, so we've seen that a lot with the Trump administration, with these lower court judges having a legal battle before them, contesting something that the administration is doing, the judge rules against the administration, usually a Biden or an Obama appointee, and then issues an injunction halting the administration from going forward. And so with that, the administration, through the Solicitor General, through the DOJ, has gone to the Supreme Court on emergency basis and said, no, we need you to lift this injunction while the litigation plays out on the merits. So say if this is a challenge under whatever principle, if you will, like birthright citizenship, okay? They said, let that play out in courts, but still let us go ahead and start enforcing the agenda we want to. And that's where we're at. There is a major case. So there was two disputes out of LA when President Trump sent the National Guard into LA. One had to do with his ability to send the National Guard. That actually was upheld by the Ninth Circuit. They sided with the administration. So that did not go to the shadow docket to the justices to decide on emergency appeal. What has is that there's groups representing unnamed illegal immigrants and illegal aliens, if you will, and also other individuals who claim that they were unlawfully detained by ICE. So they say ICE is using discriminatory practices, targeting people based on where they work. For example, car washes, landscape companies, construction companies, and they're targeting people on race and the fact that they speak Spanish. Now, ICE says, hey, this is a totality of the circumstances. We're allowed to detain people, stop and ask for papers. If you look at all of these factors, it's a reasonable suspicion basis. So the lower court has sided with these illegal aliens and said, no, the ICE cannot use these factors in justifying a, I guess, broad sweeping stop. So that's what's going before the justices now on their shadow docket. They could rule on this anytime. So what this actually means, that lower court judge stopped the administration from being able to do their sweeps in LA. And I want to give you some stats, okay? 2 million out of the 20 million people that live in that central district of California are illegal, according to DHS. And one in every 10 people. So of course, ICE is focused there. Of course, they're looking at places. They said in their petition, they've looked at workplaces that have been cited 30 times for having illegals. Yet, the fact that they go to that workplace, look at people who are speaking Spanish, that's not enough to justify them asking for papers. And so what this means with the shadow docket is that the justices will decide this based on just the paperwork, the filings from the council. They will not have any sort of oral arguments at this time. They might in the future, but on the actual injunction issue, they'll decide it on the emergency basis. And that's what a lot of people have criticism of. They want it to be, hey, let's do some more public hearings. Let's see this play out in real time. Let's know exactly where the justices fall. Sometimes when they issue these decisions on the shadow docket, they don't give you the exact breakdown of how they vote. So a lot of people call it shadow or secretive. But of course, it's necessary.
Shadow docket sounds really cool, though. Okay, so what about birthright citizenship? I know this is something it's ridiculous, obviously, that you can come over here and crap out a kid and they become an American citizen. Everyone knows it's ridiculous, but it is how it's established currently in this country. Are they going to tackle this? I know Trump's hot on it.
Yeah, you know, I think that you're right that they are going to end up having to weigh in on this. Lower courts are still ruling against the administration on the actual looking at this, the text of the 14th Amendment. I do think the fact that they got involved in the first place with this issue when it came up on emergency basis with the injunction problem, the Justice Department used the birthright citizenship case basically to get this to the Supreme Court in May, if you remember, on the whole issue of these lower court judges issuing these nationwide injunctions, blocking policy. And the Supreme Court basically said, you know, yeah, we don't really find a basis for these broad district court judges, lower court judges issuing these broad sweeping nationwide universal injunctions that block, you know, basically more than just the parties associated with a case or even a class from the administration taking effect. So countrywide. What they're looking for is they said you really need to establish some sort of class action suit to be able to get some sort of relief like that. Usually a class action suit can take months to put together. Of course, these activists had one ready to go as soon as that Supreme Court decision came down. And so that's what we're looking at now. And I do think you're right. In the new term, I suspect we do see the justices have to take this, the actual merits of the birthright citizenship argument up.
Fingers crossed. Alex, that was awesome. Come back soon. I appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. It's time to lighten the mood. And you know what's funny to me is, remember, I don't even know if I can call myself new to the media world because it's been 7 years now, but for most of my life, I've just lived a normal life, like a normal person, right? I was just a construction worker, a marine. You know, I washed dishes, right? I'm just a normal person like you. I sold RVs, do normal things. And now there are entire countries who hate me, including China. China hates my guts. I can't even visit there because of one little segment I did on Tucker Carlson back in the day.
We don't need a military that's woman-friendly. We don't need a military that's gay-friendly, with all due respect to the Air Force. We need a military that's flat-out hostile. We need a military full of type A men who want to sit on a throne of Chinese skull.
No big deal. You have to have a military built for China. Either way, the Chi-Coms are super mad about that still. They're right about it. They hate me. And so, when two Chinese vessels run into each other. I mean, you can just hear them on the microphone. Ruh-ro! You know, it's hilarious. Enough. Rook out! I'll see you tomorrow.